purpose of rituals to wake up the old mind in us, to put it to work. The old ones inside us, the collective unconscious, the many lives, the divine eternal parts, the senses and parts of the brain that have been ignored. Susanna Budapest. Hey guys, welcome to the Feast of Torches. I'm your host Azazel, and I have a special guest with us today. This is Ren, and tell us a little bit about yourself, Ren.
Hey, so first, thanks for having me, Azazel. It's just...
Of course.
Yeah, I love your podcast, so it's really exciting. So I am a Gardnerian second degree. I run Hawkfire Coven, which is an online coven, and it's adventure. And in my ordinary life, which feels extraordinary sometimes, I'm a art professor, and I am a mom and married and the normal soccer mom stuff. And I have the podcast Familiar Shapes, which looked at disinformation in the early modern witch trials, but also today in social media. And yeah, that's my existence.
Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate all of our lovely conversations that we've had in the past. And yeah, listening to Familiar Shapes really got me thinking about this topic, honestly. So we're going to be talking about social media and the occult and how it really influences, or how it has influenced the occult community since, I guess, the internet came about. And listening to Familiar Shapes really got me thinking about, like, how much it really does impact our culture, really, as, quote unquote, like, the witch community. Because I know I've seen a lot more, at least when I was coming up in the craft, a lot of it was in person. You know, obviously the internet was there, but I was too young to really have that much access to it. And so a lot of my communications with the greater pagan community was in person, going to pagan prides and meeting up with random people. And so when I got more involved in the more online side of it, especially this year, considering everybody's been quarantined, or hopefully, you know, it's definitely taken a different turn, and not necessarily in a bad way, because it does bring about more information accessible to a variety of people where that wasn't really accessible before. Right. And for that, you know, I'm super grateful for. And yeah, it's just do you have any like an opinion on like how social media has influenced the witch community?
Right. You know, it's funny because on one hand, I feel like, oh, I should be an expert in this because I did this whole podcast about, like, you know, social media. But on another level, I really have avoided a lot of online pagan and witch spaces. And it started off because people told me horror stories, right? But over time, it really, I think for myself, I decided, you know, where was I getting information that was useful to me in my practice, both my personal practice, but also my practice as a Gardnerian. And I found that the most rich information was coming from books, was coming from my coven mates and my high priest and high priestess. And that kind of personal social circle opened really, really slowly and gradually. So it was almost antithetical to social media, right? And that's not to say that I didn't try to engage with it. I mean, there was like a hot minute where I had like a secret witch Instagram account that like I think my husband knew about and nobody else. And so
don't we all, right?
And it sort of withered and died in the typical way. I was like, oh, this is a lot of work. I'm not going to bother. My altar's not pretty enough. But I realized that intersection really didn't feed my practice at all. It didn't tell me anything about the gods. It didn't tell me anything about the land that I live on, right? And it just became a time suck, just like a lot of social media. So that's not to say that there's not really valuable stuff on that, though. So when I was, you know, right before I sent Thorn my seeker letter, you know, I was like consuming Thorn Mooney's videos, and that turned into rabbit holes of other vloggers that were really, really helpful and really useful. And then I started reading, you know, Jason Mankey's blog on Pathios, and that got me onto John Beckett. And so it did reveal to me places where I found useful information on the internet, but it wasn't on Facebook and it wasn't on Instagram, it wasn't on Reddit. And I think because those spaces are the most communal those are the ones that a lot of times we look for that information in those spaces.
I completely understand what you're saying, because it at least because, you know, I'm a bit more active, I guess, than you in those spaces, or like on Facebook, on Discord.
Oh, yeah.
And I've noticed a lot of it is, I don't want to say it's like a lot of beginners just screaming into the void.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but that's kind of what it is. And it's interesting to witness, but it's also difficult to help.
Right.
Because I've tried, I've been in like many different groups, and in trying to like help everybody, like a lot of people just, I've noticed, want to just hear their own opinions just regurgitated back at them to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really improve anything.
Right.
I think that a lot of those like communities on Facebook, that it kind of perpetuates that.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult to help people get out of that, so they can actually like grow within their own practice instead of repeating the same cycle.
Right. No, I think that's so true. And I should say, I do totally lurk on a bunch of occult websites, both Gardnerian ones, but also like a whole slew of ceremonial magic ones. And I don't know, you know, I go down rabbit holes and I start following everything on Facebook. And I totally agree. I mean, you know, there's a couple Facebook groups that are sort of beginner witchcraft pages or seeker pages. And so often I leave them with my heart kind of breaking because, yeah, like I totally understand, like somebody's asking a really sincere, honest, heartbreaking question about the gods or about, you know, is it even a good idea to seek a coven? And then there's usually like this sort of relay of highly opinionated answers that have no bearing on that person's reality, probably because there's so much complexity to that reality that you just can't get in a simple question like that. So it's such a great space for information potentially, but you know, it's sort of like the best answers I've seen on seeker questions like that are when somebody says, "Hey, can I PM you?" And then just sort of hope that there's a richer conversation that unfolds from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and especially I don't want to knock the ceremonial magic stuff that I see on Facebook, but I'm glad that there's, you know, I don't know, like people talking about the fact that there's a lot of men and very few women. A lot of times there's very few BIPOC participants, and those absences are really... those are loud to me in social media spaces, which is another reason why I'm more interested in lurking on them than participating.
Yeah.
Because I can't solve some of those problems. Well, I can. I am a woman, so I can help some of that. But you have to choose your battles too. And I'm not sure I have anything useful to contribute is part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that like I've noticed, that at least I'm grateful for my lurking of the ceremonial magic sides, I guess, spaces online. A lot of people that I've interacted with have been women who are, you know, ceremonial magicians.
Right.
And it's been more women than men in my own experience, which I find, you know, I feel like that's amazing, because considering like, you know, you read all these books, they're all written by men, the majority of them.
Right.
And you see all these, and I hear it from them as well. Like even when in their own spaces, when they're communicating with other people, I know a lot of them had really popular like Tumblrs. And every time somebody would interact with them or ask them a question or something, they would always assume that they're a man.
Right. No, and it's totally true.
And this hearing about them like complaining, like it was always the assumption. And I always found that like hilarious, because like, you know, they're badass women. And
oh, yeah. No, can I tell you how hard I fangirl some of them too? I'm just it's really bad. Yeah. And it's interesting, because for me, I'm really interested in the history of magical texts. So
same.
I fangirl Al Cummins also really badly.
Oh, yes.
I know. Shout out to you wherever you are.
I think we fangirled at one point about the excellent book.
Yes. Oh, my God. We totally did. Yeah. I still sleep with it by my bed.
It is lost in a box somewhere since the move.
It's right next to my latest copy of the Opera Melon, where I'm like, yeah, I'm not ready to do that yet. But I mean, I'm really interested in the absence of known female voices in the grimoire traditions. And I think they're totally there. We just haven't been looking for them, or we don't know how to ID them, because the texts themselves are sort of hard to ID. So that's kind of the branch of history that I want to see explode in the next decade. And I'm kind of waiting for social media to kind of help foster that. Like with Twitter historians, you know, you see they've been having sort of their own little, you know, come to Jesus's, pardon the expression. So I'd love to see that, but I'm not a historian. I just fan at historians. So that's work that somebody else needs to do, but I will totally advocate it and buy their book when they publish it.
Same.
No, it's so funny. We were talking about how like the weather is crazy because a hurricane just came through here. So now it's like sunny and hot as balls in November. And like all the spring birds have just started doing their spring thing because I think they're confused. So I'm watching them out my window and it's like really beautiful in fall in North Carolina. But then there's like a disconnect. Oh,
that happened down there too. Like I noticed yesterday there was so many birds in our backyard. I was like, what is happening?
It's my people. My dinosaur people.
But yeah, go. I guess just, we can move forward onto your online coven and how that's going.
So context, like I just because I figured probably people don't know. So you know it's like February, right? And I talked to my high priestess, and I'm like, I think I'm ready to like you know start a coven. Like I think I'm ready for this, and they're like, awesome, you know, rock on with it, go for it. I'm like, cool. So like I make my little website. And I like, obviously, and then there's no witch box, right? So I'm like, I don't know where to put this. So like, I put it on the Facebook Seekers group. And then I swear to God, 2 weeks later, we go into lockdown from the pandemic. And I'm like, are you shitting me? Like, for real? Like, okay. So I go through the like magical thinking phase of like, well, maybe this means the gods don't want me to do this, which I like, I hate that.
Trust me, I felt the same way.
Right? I'm like, no.
I was about to do an initiation before lockdown. I was like,
oh, no. It's totally because of this. You know, it's like, no, sometimes a global pandemic is in fact global and you have very little to do with it. So I just sort of sat on it and I went down ceremonial magic rabbit holes and and that was this whole other shit show. but, you know, at a certain point, then when the protests started happening, the Black Lives Matter protests started happening and George Floyd was murdered, it's like it made me, I think for a lot of like white women, right? Like, it made me really look hard at my own existence and where I was conforming with racist institutions that were either overtly or covertly oppressing people of color in my community immediately, right? So as an academic, that's like really rich territory and that takes its own space of time. But then I started really thinking about that in relation to my experience of witch communities, which, you know, we were talking about earlier. My exposure to pagan spaces is pretty limited in a lot of ways. Like I've gone to Free Spirit Gathering Festival twice. Maybe three times. I can't remember. I've gone to Pantheon once when it was like around. And otherwise, I don't engage with those spaces. I don't really have a lot of reason to. And honestly, I often don't feel like I have much in common with a lot of pagans and witches of other traditions. I'm not knocking Gardnerians, but even a lot of Gardnerians, I feel like I don't really have a whole lot in common.
Same.
Yeah, I think actually probably more Gardnerians feel that way than not. And we just all feel alienated with ourselves. but my experience of it was that it was predominantly white, usually fairly well educated, though not necessarily with a lot of degrees behind that, not necessarily affluent, but it was fairly homogenous in a lot of ways. And I started really asking myself, you know, how was I contributing to that? Or what could I do differently to resist that? And I just kept coming back to the fact that we were in this crazy lockdown and, you know, everybody was doing classes and rituals online and the rituals online were sometimes hitting and sometimes missing. But I realized, you know, this was sort of this weird space where I could make an argument that it was worthwhile to try to do an online outer court in the name of a pursuit of equity, right? And because one of the things that has bothered me for years is this idea that, oh, you know, you work a minimum wage job and you live like in the middle of South Dakota, like, you know, 5 hours from the nearest coven or whatever. I don't know. Maybe there's a coven in South Dakota. I don't know. But, you know, and so, you know, the gods will provide. At some point, your circumstances will change. And if you want this to happen, it will happen.
30 years down the road.
30 years down the road, right? You know, oh, but now you're dying of cancer and like, well, oh, well, too bad. Sorry. next lifetime. I hate that. I hate that sort of magical thinking, because I think that's very, it's a way of not having to deal with somebody else's challenges. And I think that, you know, not every coven should be prepared to take on challenging situations, for sure. You know, everybody's different. Every coven's different. Mm-hmm. But I was in a position where I could do something about that person in South Dakota. Right? So yeah. I talked to my high priestess about it, and she was on board. And I sort of kind of carefully entered this out. And there was some discussion, but, you know, there's logistical things that I'm still figuring out. But yeah, so I have four people in my outer court. They're in several different countries, several different states within the United States.
Oh, they're in different countries too?
Oh yeah, different time zones. Oh dude, our time zones span like 8 time zones. It's sick. It's actually, the hardest thing is like figuring out how we get as close to sunset as possible, which like invariably never quite works out the way I hope. So yeah, I mean, and I mean, realistically, one of the things that I've talked about with all of them is that their circumstances may change. And they may actually be able to seek with a traditional coven that's in person. And if they can, they so have my blessings to go and do that. Because like the online ritual is actually working really well, but it's not the same. And I, you know, I can't pretend that it is. And one of the things that we're also doing is everybody has to start saving up, you know, even if it's only a dollar a month or the equivalent of a dollar a month, they start saving up for travel. Because before they're ever going to be considered for initiation, we have to all circle together at least once. So it'll be a giant like week-long witch retreat, which will be epic. But, you know, that's that has to happen so that they know like what that experience is like, even in the outer court context. And so, you know, we've set up like little systems to help ourselves do that. So it's like, you know, every time you buy some witch paraphernalia, whether it's a book or incense, like you have to set aside the same amount of money for your travel. And I don't know, like I spend so much money on books, like I feel like I could have a plane ticket in no time.
Witch savings program.
Right. That's exactly what it is. So far so good. But like, I have to be realistic with myself that they might move on and that will break my heart. but I also know that that's like, to me, that is like a divine mission. Like I feel like,
yeah, I mean, it's, you're giving them the opportunity to at least attempt to learn more.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, some of them, because of their circumstances, I think this will be long haul for them. And like that, like makes me really happy that I can give them some kind of space, even if it's not the ideal traditional gardenerian space. It's going to be, you know, I'm going to honor them, but by God, I'm going to honor my tradition too. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also like not completely unheard of, because even if you look at Buckland,
right?
Whenever like he went all the way to England to go get initiated and then came all the way back here and then just started his own group.
Right. I know. I feel like, I mean, like I'm being really conservative compared to him. You know, I'm like telling them all like, hey, you know, this might be 2 or 3 years in outer court just because it's going to take longer because it's online. And like, that wasn't an issue for Buckland.
No, definitely don't do the whole, all the initiations and elevations all in one weekend.
Right. Exactly.
That would be rough.
No. I know how many spoons I have.
Especially not all four of them at once. That's a lot.
Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. Like it's, and I feel like even that's so far away. Like, it's, you know, I mean, it's only been 3 months. Like, I have to keep reminding myself that, because we were circling twice a month for a while. And, you know, now with the holidays and stuff, it's sort of it's just more complicated. But yeah, it's like, nope, it's still only been 3 months.
I did want to touch on a bit something you mentioned a little bit ago when you were talking about what was happening back in June with the protests and the riots and everything, and how I really appreciate that you did take the time to add a little bit like snippets to that in your Familiar Shapes podcast. I know you said that it was recorded prior to all of that, right?
Right. Yeah. So in Familiar Shapes, I started the research for it in 2016, right after the 2016 elections and the referendum in the UK. And then I spent most of 2017 and 2018 doing preliminary interviews and then doing the final, the actual video interviews. So I was because I was going to make a film. So I was traveling all over the UK and the West Coast, you know, recording those interviews.
You went to go see them in person?
Oh, heck yeah. Yep.
Oh my God. That's so awesome.
Yeah. It was kind of epic. I got to the UK and I actually did an artist residency at the Museum of Witchcraft and Magic in Boscastle, which was I feel like I need to write a blog post about that, cause that was such an incredible experience. And that's where I met Al Cummins for the first time. And like, you know, just, yeah, like anyway, oh, all these like amazing people, John Callow, and anyway. So I rented a car and I did this kind of crazy loop around London and never really went to London, doing all these interviews, like, you know, Owen Davies and Ronald Hutton and Marion Gibson, and yeah. And got really comfortable driving on the wrong side of the road.
plan on releasing the video footage that you guys did?
Yeah, so that was actually what I was working on today before I started talking to you, was I'm editing it into a short, meaning like 20 minutes. I had a bunch of student interns working on animations for it, and they did such nice work. I really want to, I want to finish it for their sake so that they have it on that line on their resume.
Yeah.
So, but it's going to be a really stripped down version of what I was initially planning. And yeah, so all the interviews were really dated already at the end of 2019. And I was really worried that it was just going to be passé because I wanted to release it before the election. And I just felt like so much of the technical data from about bots was really old already. And so then when I sort of had to pivot and do the podcast, I think the thing that sort of surprised me in making it that way is that it became almost like it was more meditated than a diary or a journal, but it almost became that. It became sort of a self-portrait of my family and myself in the context of these larger historical conversations about the nature of disinformation. And so, you know, it's like every week there was something new with the pandemic. And then when George Floyd was killed and when Breonna Taylor was killed, and then when the protest started, it was like, it's like every month the context was changing, and I had to honor that. I had to acknowledge that. And I don't know. It's weird thinking about doing a second season, because I feel like being able to keep it current was actually one of the best things about it. But it's hard to think about, you know, like old technology in that way. Like, hey, back when we had dial-up BBS modems, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm trying to keep that current. That would be hard. So, yeah.
Are you still planning on focusing on like how, I guess, because the familiar shapes focus a lot on like the similarities between like bots and familiar spirits, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So is there going to be like a similar concept, or are you going to stick with that concept?
No, it's going to be different, just because I think I've sort of burned myself out on that topic specifically. But, you know, in the podcast and even in the last episode, I sort of dance around the fact that I'm a magical practitioner, right? Like, I don't ever talk about that. And it's not that I'm like secret about it, right? But I'm not public about it either. And it didn't feel relevant to that topic. So I didn't want to make that part of it. But I think in a second season, one of the things that I do want to kind of own more and fold back into it is the fact that I am a magical practitioner, but I'm also a rationalist, and I'm the child of scientists, and I believe in the scientific method, and I don't struggle with any particular paradox. And I think there's a lot of people who feel that way. So, I'm a little torn about the direction of the topic. Part of me wants to do something really specific about contemporary magical practice in relation to technology. So like in my fantasy world, I would be like interviewing, you know, Josephson Storm and like Peter Berbergall, and and I have a whole other list of people that I fangirl. but then part of me is also, and this is maybe a fallout of looking at ceremonial magic over the summer, part of me also wants to sort of wrestle with this polarity, or this idea of polarity between good and evil, because it's so antithetical to so much magical practice and so much pagan belief. And it's also antithetical, I think, to a lot of secular beliefs in our mm-hmm. society today. Yet we still live with that legacy, and we still frame things in this way of good and evil and black and white. And I think that I'm still thinking about that in part because that's what's happened in social media spaces, right? Like, we polarize yeah. things because it's easy. It's very, very hard to grapple with things that are complex and contradictory in themselves. We don't like to do it. It's hard to do. It makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah, that happens in all spaces. Like, even like, just look at like what happened with this like election.
Oh yeah.
And seeing all these things online, like, you, I guess, well, me as more of a liberal person, I'm seeing, you know, everybody essentially saying that the other side is bad and they're evil or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sure, that may be true from your perspective, but also from their perspective, you also have to look at it. They feel the same way about you.
Right.
And it's, and I think equating that, because it really helped me, like, when I was looking into ceremonial magic and really understanding, like, even just the differences between, like, angels and demons, and how right. there really isn't that much of a difference.
Right. Yes.
And so, like, understanding that your idea or your perception of what good and evil is, isn't necessarily the case. It's just right. how you perceive it and how you interact with those environments and those entities. And just seeing that online and seeing those similarities, it's made me more able to not be so, I guess, forthright with my judgment and take a second and put myself in somebody else's shoes and see where they're coming from before doing anything. And at least that's what's helped me the most in interacting with people. And I've gotten a lot of like flack of just like, oh, how can you interact with this person? They did this thing. And it's like, yeah, but you know, you also have to understand that not everybody is you.
Right.
And they're not living in your reality.
Right. And the thing is, it's like, I think there's the things that you hold dear and that you value as important. Hmm. And those sort of fundamental mores are often the things that are hardest to kind of bend on or navigate on. And that's not bad in of itself.
No.
The hard part is when you decide that your own mores are the only mores that are worthwhile and that everybody else's mores are wrong. And if they maintain them, then you should just, you know, kick them out or something. Stop existing. Right. And that happens in any polarizing situation. So the trick then for all of us is, I think, is to really say, how do we hold on to the things that we value? You know, I value racial justice. Like, I value mm-hmm. gender equity. But I also, you know, value my kind of, I'm so glad that I have acquaintances who I'm sure will never listen to this, but like my redneck hunter friends who I really care about as human beings, but who totally feel very, very different from me about so many things. Mm-hmm. They value things that are fundamentally different. And I want to make sure that they have a space to exercise their existence without yeah. infringing on somebody else's. And I don't want my exercising of my rights to infringe on somebody else. So, you know, yeah, that's a beautiful thing about democracy. I had this amazing social studies teacher in middle school who was like, it's real easy. My rights end where your nose begins. And he'd like hold out his hand in a fist and like, you know, and his fist would be like, you know, a centimeter away from your nose. And it's like, oh yeah, it actually is that simple. Except when it's not. But I think, you know, most of the times when we're creating these binaries, I think the angel and demon analogy is really great. Like, we are demonizing these things when mm-hmm. really, what are the angels, right? Like,
yeah, like they'll mess with your life just as badly as the demons will. Right? So like, honestly, it's a toss up.
Right. I mean, like, you know, it's like I go hunting for a reason because it reminds me that there's not this binary. Like, you know, when my hawk kills the squirrel and it eats the squirrel, it's horrible for the squirrel, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst thing. That's like evil incarnate for that squirrel. For the hawk.
The great Morticia Adams once said, what is chaos to the fly is food for the spider.
Yeah. Like, yes.
I'm sure, yeah, I misquoted exactly. that, but.
Oh, man. Can you actually misquote Morticia? I mean, she's just put words into your mouth yeah. all day and it would be amazing. Yeah, I mean, so I think like realizing that you can have a circumstance that's horrible and wonderful all at the same time. And like, to me, that's witchcraft. Like, mm-hmm. lean into that fucking paradox.
Yeah.
Because that's hard. But I think there's so much that we can learn and grow from by mm-hmm. engaging with that really incredible difficulty.
Yeah, that uncomfortability in those spaces, and really focusing on like, what is this thing that you're looking at?
Right. And I mean, I have to acknowledge, like, that's a position of privilege too, right? Like,
yeah, true.
But it's like, if you have that privilege, like, what are you doing with that privilege then? And I think part of it is, you know, learn about your own implicit biases as best you can. And then, like, you know, lean into the things that make you uncomfortable so you can make spaces easier for people who already live with a lot of discomfort. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you talked a little bit about this earlier when you were saying that how, like, your experience in the greater community didn't really reflect, I guess, what you wanted in the sense of diversity.
Yeah.
And, you know, me coming from Miami, where you know, I was trained within the Garnerian tradition, and like, the majority of us are Hispanic.
Right, right.
And so, like, the way that so we didn't really interact with the greater wider Garnerian community until we get third, or at least from my upline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all my experience with Garnerians is that they were all Hispanic. I mean, obviously I knew that wasn't true, right. But just like, that was just my environment. And then, you know, being introduced to them once I did get third degree, it was like, this is a weird space to be in now. Cause like, everybody else is doing something way different than not super different, but
right.
It's just like, it was definitely an interesting, experience, but also I appreciate my experience as well, considering that, you know, there's not really that much representation for Hispanic or people of color in traditions like, or British tradition, right. British traditions in general, really. It does seem to be very dominated by more of the white community, but that's not to say that it's only for the white community.
Right.
Like, I think that our traditions can expand any sort of culture that you may have been brought up in, because it's I feel like it's adaptable, and it's right. Your background doesn't really play into anything that we're doing in the craft.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think, this is the kind of magical thinking I can get behind, but like, you know, if you're called to these gods and you don't know why, but you are, like, if you're called to this tradition for some inexplicable reason, mm-hmm. like, that's good enough for me, you know, for the most part. But I think, you know, because we're an initiatory mystery tradition, we do have a unique set of challenges that mm-hmm. we have to face and be really honest about, which is, I know people hate the phrase gatekeeping. And I want to sort of, I wish we could reclaim that as sort of like magical mm-hmm. gates that reveal mysteries, like, you know, but like, because it is that kind of situation, I guess, it's like there's so many gates in American society for people of color, right? Like, how do you make sure that gate just doesn't look like a giant barrier because of race? And like, obviously nobody, or I hope nobody's talking about it that way, but like, I can see that it would function that way.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen it, especially online. And sadly, coming from people within our own community, you know, why would they want to join this tradition? Like, why don't they join something that comes from their background?
Oh my God, I hate
that.
What are you
even talking about right now? Like,
right? I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. I'm sorry. That stuff makes me so pissed. I'm like, guys, like, 90% of us who are white in America are mutts anyway. Like, it's not like it's like, oh God, it's like the census. Like, what ethnicity are you? I'm like, I don't know. Where's Heinz 57? You don't have that listed. Why is it not listed? Like, come on. Jesus Christ. I'm not Celtic, right? I'm not like, oh, British Isles.
But even like, then, like, you weren't raised within those pagan cultures. So
I
like
hate that stuff.
It's still irrelevant.
Right. I'm from New Jersey, whatever the gods of New Jersey are. Like, I should talk to Deborah Litt, right? Right. There's a there, I'm telling you. Yeah, you know? Hail Satan.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's I see that, and it's those are some of the times when I'm mm-hmm. like, it makes me want to get off social media. But I stay on because I think I hope that it shifts over time, you know, that as like, you know, our whole society evolves and changes, like I hope the gardenering community and which communities in general like yeah. evolve too. And I think they just will, right? Like the gardenering community of today yep. is not the same as it was in the 1970s, you know, or even the 1980s. And that's not a good or a bad thing. It just is. So yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think even though, at least for me, just like being in those spaces, like even though it can be exhausting sometimes, I feel like we, at least I think more people who have had more quote unquote, like classical training, if you want to call it that, you know, being more involved right. with people who don't have that option, because like there are there's a plethora of books that are out there that, yes, they can help, but a lot of them aren't necessarily, I don't want to say good books or bad books, but they tend to influence you in a way that this way is the right way. And that's never the case.
Right.
Like it may be right for them. And a lot of people right. do tend to write their own UPG as fact. But I think that's something to even just to talk about that with potential like people who are interested in the craft can open their eyes to being more aware of
right.
the context in which people are talking, especially in a lot of these newer books that have been coming out, where it's just like you have to be able to provide that resource for them. Like even if they don't want to listen to us, you know, we say our piece right. and help as much as we can. In as positive a way that we can, instead of just belittling people within a lot of these beginner groups, because like we were all there right. once, trust yeah. me. Like I was 13 when I started getting into the craft. Right. I didn't know
absolutely.
Fuck all about anything. you know, it's yeah.
Think about how that feels when you're like 40.
No,
here, I
thought
I knew everything, and now I really don't.
I think it's good to at least help where we can. And I think being more involved in those online spaces should be more of a priority, especially now during COVID, when we don't really have the right. resource of Witchbox and you know, thankfully now we have Mandragora yeah. Magica. You know, that's
Mandragora
that's
Magica.
Been a great
yeah,
resource
awesome.
For people to you know, list their covens, and I don't think it's necessarily taken the replacement of Witchfox yet, but I think it's possible that it could get there. But that does involve being more active on
yeah, so.
Social media sites and you know, being available as a resource for people.
Right. No, I was at a talk by a really well-known historian on Pagan Matters, and I'm just not saying his name because like it's one of those things
okay.
I'm not 100% sure if he'd be okay with it or not. But anyway. But one of the things he said, which really stuck with me, was one of the reasons why it's still challenging for witches and pagans
mm-hmm.
within our own communities, right, is that we're not public in the larger communities. So like, if you think about elected offices, you know, there's only a few people in North America that I can think of who are openly pagan in some way, shape, or form, and in elective office. I don't know of any gardenerians, but it could be that they just aren't public. Well, okay, obviously, the point I'm making is like, if you're public about what you are and what you practice, and then get into those positions of power, you suddenly become mm-hmm. kind of a representative of that. And that's a scary thing. But at the same time, when we're thinking about these issues of inclusivity and equity, mm-hmm. I think that's even more important than ever to have people who are public and saying, this is a practice for anyone, right? If you're called to it.
I mean, I think like even, you know, not going as grand a scale as like a political office, but even sense of, you know, Thorn Mooney has her YouTube channel, and Ashley runs Seeking Witchcraft, and even like I have
right.
this one, it's more you're making yourself more available. But you know, even when I started creating or thought about creating this podcast, you know, there was a lot of thought process that had to go into that. It's like, okay, doing this, and let's say it doesn't, you know, blow up or whatever, I am now a representation of a gardener and high priest within this greater community that's now listening to me. How do
right.
I want to represent
yep.
us? and how do I want to, provide decent
Right.
information for people who are seeking, who are learning. So yeah, I think that's something that we all may struggle with.
No, and I remember my train of thought. It got like really muddled up in there, but because politics. But I think, one of the things that I've come across with different seekers is that their economic situation is really so stark, either because of the country they live in or for other reasons. And it's really not one of these things where it's like, oh, you clearly need to make these fundamental life changes to like improve your situation. It's like, no, like that's, you need to have your shit in gear, to pursue something like the craft. It's a demanding tradition, in a lot of ways. But like at the same time, like, I have seekers who, they literally can't afford a $40 book in US dollars because it's like a lot of money for them. And so I think making information accessible to people in lots of different platforms, there's some Gardnerians who are working on, audiobooks of some key texts that are, written by Gardner. And I'm so excited about that because there's people who, have, vision impairment issues or, even ADHD, can cause issues with reading. So I think making sure that that good information and also primary resources are available to like broad audiences when we're thinking about accessibility, I think that's really critical too. I'm really excited about the fact that these are conversations right now. Because I think, it's the beginning of that work, but like it's a really important beginning. I don't know that the work ever
Did you
ends, but
was there anybody else that I guess maybe also stepped up when you talked to the community about starting an online coven? Was there anybody else that was possibly thinking about that, or is it just you? Because I know the only one that I've heard of is yours.
right. I had a couple people message me back channel who said that they had some people they were working with long distance for, diverse reasons, or that they were kind of doing it, in different ways on their own. But I think I'm the only one who's public about it. I'd love to see that change. Shout out to Guard community. Only because like, okay, so I have four people in my outer court and like that's about what I can handle. And if I do this in the sort of thorough way that I want to do it, it's going to be 2 or 3 years before they can be initiated, which means it'll be 2 or 3 years before I could take on maybe another four people, So, and I've received like really wonderful, beautiful, heartfelt seeker letters, and I've just been trying to do what I can to help them find groups in different ways. And sometimes it's worked out, and sometimes they're still looking. But I think there really is a need for particularly people in countries who don't have the money to travel. I think that's a really big thing. And I think we see that online quite a lot is people in different countries, not even for Gardnerian traditions, but looking for groups that are practicing, that are safe, that are organized, and they're just really isolated. And I think that's one of the strengths of the internet is that it does have this capacity to connect us when we really are physically isolated. So I think the more we can do to just support seekers, even if you don't take them on, just really help them,
Oh, yeah, for sure.
because it's such a
And
hard
I
path.
think, going back to what you said, like providing a great resource that is can be safe for the seeker is, I think, should be our number one priority. Because like I think that there are so many things that I've heard about that at least tries to get dealt with as much as it can be, but there's still always going to be those people who either aren't active online and you don't really know about them and they're in the middle of nowhere, but they're this Gardnerian community and they're doing, or quote unquote Gardnerians that are doing really weird things that none of the rest of us do. And there's no way for like it's not as, unless you go onto like the Gardnerian Seekers Initiates page and ask somebody, or I guess have the spoons enough to ask somebody, hey, is what's happening here okay? I think us being able to, or I guess us providing a learning how to provide a better, safer environment for people to ask for vouchers and as for, you know, just to make sure that they're in a safe environment if they do question whatever is going on within the group that they're with. And I think being more active
Right.
in social media spaces can help with that. I feel like that's really our only option at the
Right.
moment. There's no, you know, teleportation system right now.
Yeah. No, and I think the nature of that landscape is shifting under our feet in really weird ways right now. So like right now that Gardnerian Facebook seekers group is so important. I mean, it really is that hub that's there to connect seekers to covens. I mean, it's really the go-to. The thing is, like, I've noticed more and more that there are people who aren't on Facebook for really, really good reasons, because Facebook is horrible. Like, they're just horrible. And a lot of social media, I think, is not yet grappling with the role that it plays in our larger societies and also our families. So I like when I hear somebody say, well, you know, I'm not on Facebook, so I can't access that group. The last thing I want to tell them is like, oh,
Well,
well,
you're
you
shit
just need to
out
get on
of luck
Facebook if you're really serious about this. Because it's, I'm like, I know, right? Which is like Mandragora Magica, you know, thank goodness for them. But they're, you know, it's tricky because it's being able to get those, you know, vouchers or getting a list of groups that are really verified. That's a scary process. And you know, and also I want to push against that a little bit too, because I think I really, really, really embrace the idea that each coven is autonomous, right? That you know, what I do is my own business, and what another coven leader does is their own business, and I support them because we're in the same tradition. And if they say to me, I am honoring and passing down this tradition as it was handed to me, that's
It's not,
got to be
it's not
good
your
enough for
place to
me.
question it.
It's not my job to like police or gatekeep. Right. So I think the desire to police and gatekeep, you know, for the most part comes from a good place, right? It's that desire to protect seekers, right?
I do think that there is another side to that as well, 'cause like at least from what I've gathered from speaking to a lot of the elders in our community, at least down in Florida, a lot of it is to, you know, we are, I guess it is like this mindset of, you know, we're witches, we have to keep in secret, and everything that we do is secret. And so it's kind of hard to be secretive, but also be open to the community without, you know,
Right.
listing. Because I know people have, I think, I don't want to say that they're obscene fears, because you never know what could happen. But I think a
Right.
lot of people do have that fear of like everybody having a list of where their coven is, what their coven's name is, who the high priestess is on
Right.
a group. Or on a website for that matter. And like let's say something, you know, out of
Right.
the world happens, and the quote unquote burning times happened, or they just start rounding everybody up, which I don't think is going to happen. But I think people do have that fear of, okay, now they know where we are, and there's no like hiding from anything now.
Right. No. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit real briefly about like how hard oaths are. And I was listening to somebody else talking about this not that long ago, and they said something that I really like, it really jibes with me, which is like the sort of two oaths that seem most clear are like the god names, right? And also the names of other practitioners. Like you don't out them. Right. Now if they announce themselves publicly, like that's their business and that's great and you know, whatever. And that takes me back to that whole thing about like, man, if we had like a Gardnerian in Congress who was like an out Gardnerian, I'm just saying, like, we got Mormons, you know, like we're not as weird as them.
You can do it,
I'm
Ryan.
just
I'll
kidding.
vote for you.
We're definitely weirder. But oh God, no. I'm like having an outer court is busy enough.
What am
So what
I
are you
working on
working on
next?
next? I want to know that. Yeah, see,
Honestly, just
yeah.
I have lots of like I feel like every day, you know, somebody brings up some random topic that literally has nothing to do with witchcraft, and I'm like, oh, I need to talk about that on my podcast. But besides that, a lot of it is, or at least has been, me getting more into, now that we're like somewhat done with the move, where I'm planning on more getting more or back into being more crafty. I used to make a lot of like incense boxes, and I would sell them at like our gathers, with like incense and other
Oh,
random
yeah.
things that I would carve into wood, and working with wood a lot, and like wood carving, wood burning, and stuff like that. So I'm trying to get back into that, but also I tried working the Hecateion with a friend of mine, and
Oh, yeah.
we stopped because it. We read through the rest of the book and we didn't really agree with where the direction of it went. So we're either gonna, thinking about
Okay, yeah.
reworking some of the rituals that are in there so it's more, I guess, agreeable to what we're comfortable with, or scrapping it all together and starting trying to work another book.
Write your own book.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I'm a horrible writer. That's why I did the
What?
podcast, because I can't write.
Stop. That's what Grammarly's for, right? That solves all their problems. That's what I'm telling myself.
But yeah, that's pretty much about what I've been focusing on now. I've been learning to do short term goals and not long term goals that are super difficult to achieve.
I got Bennebell Wen's 2021 planner, and next year looks like it's going to be so epically horrible for me for like the next starting going on for like 5 years that
Wait,
I
do you
think
already
I'm
have the next 5 years planned out?
well no normally I don't,
Oh.
but now I feel like I should just plan on like putting my head in a hole in the ground and not coming out.
I mean, you never know when a 2020 repeat year, the remix will come back. So.
Right. We're not going to have the burning times. We're just going to have COVID times.
COVID times forever.
COVID times forever.
And it's just gonna suck.
God. Oh, so, there was that whole thing about, quote unquote, baby witches on Witch Talk, hexing the moon and hexing the fae. And I think, so if I were a good journalist, I would have started that by saying, well, now none of this is true, but this, thing about baby witches hexing the moon and hexing the fae. But I think the thing that's really important about that is, and this was sort of fascinating to me as somebody who studies social media, was looking at how it aligned with our confirmation biases and how we ran with it. So I think there's this idea because we're magical practitioners, somehow we're immune to real world ills, and we are not. Like, we are just as susceptible to
We're
confirmation
all
bias
humans.
and implicit bias and racism and like all these things. This is just, we are human beings and we do these things. And so I think like the usual advice on social media is that if something triggers you at all or kind of gets at your goat, if your goat's Black Phillip, then
Oh, I want
I know. Then you wanna step back and wait 5 minutes at least and really, really think about like, okay, why did this kind of get under my skin? And then really do the homework to find out if it's true or not. And if you can't confirm that it's true, like if you're not 100% sure, then don't say anything about it. Just let it die. Because the thing is, like, misinformation gets spread around because it's sexy or it's scary or it triggers us in some way. And they don't like, here's the thing with the documentary. I started the documentary focusing on malicious social bots, but the fact of the matter is, like, today we don't need bots to do that work. We do that
No.
work, like human
Oh,
beings.
yeah.
So like it's we're kind of our own worst enemies. And it's so funny. Like, I was talking with somebody online about AI and kind of speculations about science fiction and where AI can go. And he was talking about Star Trek and how in Star Trek, AI is always sort of quasi-sentient and just a little bit malicious and a little bit tricky and kind of fucks with you. But the fact of the matter is, like, AI just learns to get to know us better. And we are our own worst enemies. So the better AI gets to know us, the better they say, oh, well, obviously, Heather can't not eat the Reese's peanut butter cups if we put them in the pantry. So we're just going to put them in the pantry because obviously she likes them. So she'll just eat all of them, and that's how she gains 10 pounds in 1 month. I think like being aware of our sheer humanity in an online space and knowing our failings and just not being reactive. So like, you know, if you need to like put a piece of tape over the button that says retweet or like do that, like whatever you have to do to like make yourself stop. And I would say if there's any programmers who are listening to this, like add plugins for God's sake for like Twitter and Facebook and Reddit, where like you can force yourself to wait 5 minutes. There's actually apps that do that. I think they're pretty,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But it's like, that's what we have to do. We have to be really magical in online spaces. You have to work so hard against your humanity.
Yeah. I think like even just talking about that, the whole like quote unquote baby, which is hexing the moon. I remember me and Ashley were talking about it and I took a second cause I'm on TikTok.
Right.
Well, I watch a lot of TikTok, I should say. I'm not on it. and actually like it after, you know, thinking that these kids are just losing their minds over nothing. It really, like, I took a second to be like, okay, let me find the video that talks about somebody doing this,
right,
or anything that talks like the beginning of this. How did this, like, what is the origin story of witches hexing the moon? Cause I don't understand. And so like, I could not find anything. There was no sources of like this one person was like, oh, yeah, you know, the moon, I don't know, flicked me off. And so I'm going to hex it. I don't know. Yeah. Like there was no like, it was just, I think somebody may have said it as like a joke and then it went, got blown way out of proportion.
Right. Yeah.
And then everybody just started taking it seriously. And then all of the quote unquote adult witches who were not acting like adults during this time were making fun of them.
Right.
Because they were losing their minds.
Right.
But at the same time, because like, even if you think about it, like there's not, it's not that there's no precedent for this happening. Like,
right.
There is historical context where people would, you know, that I'm pretty sure it was in Italy where they would just take the saint statue and like put it in the ground until the saint did what they wanted it to do.
Oh yeah, sure. Like if you read like a radio, like half of the shit's just like cussing out, you know, Diana or whatever and being like, you suck and you should do this thing for me because I'm telling you, you suck.
Exactly. Which is literally like hexing the moon or I guess cursing
the moon. Yeah, basically. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's, you know, in the history of, you know, Western magical traditions since the 20th century, like that's not something we're comfortable doing with deities for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, with, you know, important and pronounced exceptions, of course. So.
Mm-hmm. Which I think kind of also plays into the whole, because I've noticed this a lot in when speaking to more Wiccan leaning practitioners, whenever they're tackling like ceremonial magic, and the aggressiveness that is ceremonial magic towards spirits.
Oh, shoot. Or the PGM. I mean, right.
And so like trying to change that and we're like, oh, let's be friends with the spirits and let's make friends with them because we're witches or we're Wiccans and we don't treat spirits like that, which I understand to an extent, because I feel like if you're going to work within the paradigm of this grimoire or whatever, I feel like you have to work within that paradigm. You can't. Right. You know, rework the entire thing into your mindset just because it makes you comfortable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, and that's one of the things that I love about, you know, the work that I was doing this summer with that is that I love being uncomfortable with something new. I don't know, like maybe that's my own weird, like, you know, masochism, but like, and I love that discomfort of having to, you know, work with the Christian God, right? And like, And then the Jewish God, you know, in some cases. So it's like, and I think I never found a happy place with that, which is one of the reasons why I sort of left off.
Yeah,
but same. I think it also like led me to a lot of other information that I think was really fruitful. Like, I don't know, like a philosopher friend, I was talking to her about this and she clued me into the, Gnostic scriptures. So now I've been like sort of reading this translation of the Gnostic scriptures and I'm like, holy fuck, like this shit's batshit crazy. but it's complicating the history of Christianity for me in a way that I feel like it's making me be more, it's forcing me to lean against my own implicit biases, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I think that's, there's something useful in that.
Yeah, I think at least from my thought process on how to tackle that kind of situation is to really just, you know, work it as close to the book as you can.
Yeah.
And then once you have a deep understanding of what it is that you're actually doing, at that point you can change things.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. I think that's true with any tradition, you know, in any magic practice, you know. But I think, like, too, especially for new witches, you know, going to the seekers and, you know, thinking about the seekers online, you know, the one advice that I love when people give it is just, you know, when they say, just do the thing, you know,
research. It's so
true. Just like, you know, don't worry if you're going to burn down your house doing the spell. Yes, that's definitely happened to some people in the past, but, you know, ignoring that.
It's not as common.
And, you know, I think I shouldn't have said that because now people are going to be paranoid. But, like, I think really, and also trusting yourself. Like, you know, when I was a kid, I would, you know, I took Erica Young's, like, witch's book, and I would, like, go through and try to do the spells from that just because it was, like, the witchcraft book that I had from the library, and it had super sexy pictures. And to this day, I think that was some of actually the best spell work that I've ever done because I was just launching into it with this open heart and open mind. Yeah. And when I, you know, couldn't figure out how to get a material or couldn't figure out how to do a material, like, I'd ad hoc it and I'd go off of instinct. And I think, you know, anybody who's considering witchcraft, they should just trust their own instinct, that they're probably not wrong.
Yeah. Just, I know my first spell I ever did, and everybody laughs at me when I tell them, is, so the binding spell from The Craft.
Oh yeah.
So I mixed that with the not magic spell that's in Buckland's Big Blue Book.
Yeah.
And that was my first spell. And it worked great. So I was like, fuck yeah.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God. Okay, wait. So Erica Young's book, there were two spells in that. I'm not sure which one was first. The first was like a love spell where you're supposed to capture your lover's image in a mirror and then trap it in a box. But I was like, you know, 12. I was 12 and, like, I didn't really have a lover. I just liked the idea of it. So, like, I trapped my own reflection in the box, and probably explains why I'm a problem today. But the better one was you had to make a wand. So, like, they were talking about how you hollow out the core of, like, I can't remember what kind of wood. And then you stuff it with cotton, and then you drench the cotton with your own blood, and then you say this incantation or something over it. And so, like, I'm like 12. And, like, I have, like, this shitty pocket knife and, like, whatever random stick I found. And, like, I'm like, I can't hollow out the core. Like, my knife is too big.
I don't even know how to do that as a 27-year-old man.
Oh, right? I mean, I have a drill press. There's a lot more I can do now than I can.
Oh, yeah, I guess we can buy tools now as adults.
Because adults. But, like, so I drilled a hole in it perpendicularly. Send it through the core. And then I stuffed it with cotton. And then I didn't want to, like, make myself bleed because, ew. And so, like, I had a scab on my knee from when I fell, and I picked up my scab until I got enough blood to, like, have some tiny minuscule DNA on it. And
been there.
My wand. It was amazing. And then I never used it.
Yeah. I still have my first wand. It was a twig that I had found outside that's maybe, like, 6 inches. And then I wrapped it in thread that I found in my mom's sewing box.
Oh, yeah. I swear. You know, maybe instead of a podcast, my next project should be just like a photo book of the random twigs on people's altars that we collect and we just don't have the heart to discard over years. Just dusty twigs. It'd be called Dusty Twigs.
Yeah, I had that conversation with my little sister because she's 12 now and she's getting into the craft. And I tell my mom this all the time. It's not my fault. I haven't been near her in like 8 years. Like, I have no influence. last time I saw her a couple months ago, she was asking me about, like, wands, and, like, she really likes crystals and stuff. And she was like, oh, like, what was your first wand? And so I was telling her about it, and she was like, really? I was like, damn.
I know, they're so disappointed by the mundanity of it.
Like, my wand now is cool, all right? It's a horn. It's got a crystal in it. It looks badass. But I still have my first one. And she was like, I was like, do you want me to give it to you? It could be your first one. She was like, no, it's okay. I'll make it. I was like, damn. The sassy 12-year-old.
Oh my God. Right. My son is so not interested in magic, but he's got the most epic altar to Athena. And I'm just like, okay,
that's pretty
okay.
Badass.
Right. I'm like, you know, if you're going to do that, rock on with your bad self. Oh wait, shameless plug. So, I sweet talked my husband into like making, a graphic design logo of Quinn's quote from the podcast where he says, "I'm a scientific dude of science."
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was great.
So you can now buy that on mugs and t-shirts, and any proceeds from it go to, will get donated to Girls Who Code.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, thanks so much. This was super fun talking with you. I mean,
you know, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, and actually, if any of your listeners have thoughts on magic and technology, like that's something that they do a lot, they should drop me a line, because I am really interested in exploring that, and I feel like there's a good connection between that and good and evil. So it might be a while until that next season comes out, but I do want to do a second season.
But I am waiting patiently for it, but not patiently, because I don't know how to be patient, but...
That's why you have your own podcast, to keep you busy and off the streets.
Oh God, yeah. Trust me, I have a lot to keep me busy with this thing.
Oh my
God. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too.
Hopefully you'll come back on soon, because I plan on having a group discussion with some of Kithic.
Oh my God.
How many people we can have on here. But...
That would be so hella fun.
But yeah, that's definitely something planned for the hopefully immediate future, the next couple episodes. But yeah, thank you again, Ren, for coming on and having this big old discussion about social media and its impactfulness on the craft and our communities. And yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Zazel. And yeah, I'll see you around on the interwebs.
Is there any way if somebody does want to get into contact with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, there's two different ways. My podcast related, if it's podcast related, probably the best way to reach me is heatherfreeman@uncc.edu. That's my work email, so that's just where all my sort of professional crap goes. If it's related to magic, hawkfirecoven@gmail.com. Honestly, it doesn't really matter which one you email, it's just easier for me because I keep them separate in my brain. So those are the best ways. Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again, and thank you guys for listening. You guys have a good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.